Wednesday, August 10th, 2022. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. I hope your week is going well. Hope it's off to a good start. Hope whether you're in school or maybe you're at work, hope everyone around you is staying strong. Hope everyone is staying healthy in your world right now. Stay strong mentally. I've told you before, it is easy to get worn down mentally. You know, it isn't just here in the United States where we are ramping up for the upcoming football season. Remember, the Premier League got started on Friday, and I know what you're thinking right now. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking things like, will Manchester City and Liverpool continue their dominance over the rest of the league? Can Manchester United somehow improve off their sixth place finish last season? Okay, well, maybe that's not what you're thinking. But a lot of people are thinking those things. Somewhere, somebody's thinking that, I guarantee it. And it is becoming a tradition here at the Daily Dose that I get a few emails, and lately I think I've gotten one the last 2 or 3 years from a listener by the name of Zach, and they basically say the same thing every single year. They say, Clint, who are you rooting for in the Premier League this year? And I always kind of struggle to name a team. I always kind of struggle, should I pick a team? Should I jump on a bandwagon? Because who do I pick? I don't have any allegiance to any team in England. I don't have that. That's not who I am. So this year, because we got asked again by Zach, Clint, who are you going to pick? Who is the Daily Dose rooting for in the Premier League? I feel like I've got to do it. I've got to jump in. I've got to pick a team. I struggle to do this, but I'm going to try. And as I went through the league and I was trying to pick, who do I go with? It's kind of tough. Because do I go like front runner? Do I take one of the favorites? Do I take a Man City? Do I take Manchester United or a Liverpool? No, I can't do that. I'm not LeBron James. I can't just jump on the best team all the time. And at the same time, I also don't really feel like picking a never-will-be team, like a Burnley or a Sheffield. I already have my Denver Nuggets if I want a never-will-be team, so I didn't want to go that route. I don't need to pick one of the teams that should probably be relegated to a lower league like Norwich or Watford or something. I already have the Colorado Rockies for that. And I'd prefer not to be part of like that obnoxious fan base. Like you think of like the Dallas Cowboys, Notre Dame, the New York Yankees. So I can't be a fan of like Arsenal. That goes right in that same vein. Newcastle's referee looking kits, they're just too ugly. Kind of like what they're doing, but I don't think I could cheer for Newcastle. And so, today on the Daily Dose, I am going to announce that the Daily Dose and myself, Clint Daly, I will instead go with the team that is good. They look good. They play well. They have some talent. But I also know in advance, they're going to break my heart every single year because that is just what they do. So I'm announcing today that the Daily Dose is now fully on board with the Tottenham Hotspur. Let's go, Harry Kane. Let's go, Spurs. I guess that's just where we're going to go. Tottenham is going to be our team, at least this year. We'll see how the rest of that goes. Now, while most of the world is gearing up for the football season here in the United States, we actually just watched our first NFL preseason game. The Hall of Fame game was last Thursday. Between the Las Vegas Raiders and the Jacksonville Jaguars, the Raiders won pretty easily 27-11, but there were a few other things that I actually took from that opening game. One, I hate to say this, I don't want to step on any toes here, but this Hall of Fame class, it feels a tad underwhelming to me. Jaguars offensive lineman Tony Boselli, Raiders wide receiver Cliff Branch, safety Leroy Butler, official Art McNally, linebacker Sam Mills, defensive lineman Richard Seymour, coach Dick Vermeil, and defensive lineman Bryant Young. Just reading that list, honestly, almost put me to sleep. Aside from Cliff Branch, who we know was electric in his day, and Dick Vermeil, who was a very, very good coach, but honestly, they probably should make his bust actually crying. That class gets elected into the Hall of Fame. Meanwhile, Randy Gradishar is still waiting, which is just absolutely insane. So the Hall of Fame class, it doesn't really stand out to me, but the game itself, again, we always want the NFL back so bad that we are sure. We're like, oh, I can't wait to watch this game. It was on Thursday night. Nothing else going. It's almost the weekend. Have some dinner. Turn on the game. Let's watch this game. And then it starts and you're like, none of the starters are playing. And suddenly I like remember some yard work that I have to do because this football is terrible. That was ugly football last Thursday. But did you by chance hear former Dallas Cowboys quarterback and head coach Jason Garrett on the broadcast team? If you thought the football was bad, that was worse. And you know, I've told you before, I rarely listen to broadcasters. I just don't do it. I think they have a way tougher job than people think they do. I think they are asked to do things in the moment that the average person, if you put them there, they wouldn't even get anything out. They would just be completely stupefied by the whole process. So I cut those guys some slack, but Jason Garrett, let's just say he was interesting. Let's go with that. For one, he told the exact same story two different times. I don't know if he forgot what he was doing. That felt more like a Frank Gifford thing at the end, because by the end of his career, Frank Gifford, I don't even think he was facing the field. He had no idea what was going on. But Garrett's way younger than that. Shouldn't he be sharper than that? And second, Jason Garrett just yelled the whole time. Settle down, Jason. You're not Stephen A. Smith. What are you doing? So we've got some NFL preseason going. But one of the biggest stories of this past week actually involved, you know, a WNBA player, which is kind of weird to think about. But a Russian court found WNBA star Brittany Griner guilty of drug possession and smuggling and sentenced her to 9 years in prison last Thursday. The outcome was not unexpected. I mean, did anyone think she would get off on a technicality? Not in Russia. That's not going to happen. So now we see if President Joe Biden is willing to trade like an international terrorist for someone who was apparently too dumb to take the weed out of her bags before she went to the airport. Doesn't really seem like a good trade. Seems like a really, really bad trade. And, you know, back in the States, we're seeing some people really, really angry about this whole situation. And when I say people, I mean rich white people, especially rich white women. They are saying things like, this is racism. This is homophobia. These are trumped up charges. Meanwhile, a lot of people back here in the States are like, big deal. I got a cousin that is still locked up for a pot charge like back in the 90s. Why is she any better than them? So now, Brittany Griner will have to wait it out, and the WNBA will, I guess, have to make up some more t-shirts. I don't know. Doesn't seem like they're doing much else, but they are making t-shirts. I mean, remember this, though. LeBron James did say that she might want to stay there, and now she gets to. But, I mean, I'm sure Brittany Griner, through this process now, I'm sure she does have some regrets. I'm sure she regrets not being grateful for the country that she lived in when she was here. Because when she was home, she had it pretty good. And I know, you know, she's doing some protesting thing and saying how bad things here are. I bet she probably looks back and goes, yeah, maybe it wasn't quite as bad as what I have now. I'm sure she regrets trying to be sneaky and trying to, you know, pass that through her bag. She may even regret going to play in Russia in the first place. Because she was just looking to make some extra money over there. She probably is like, oh, I should have went somewhere else. She probably wishes she could have gone to China to play instead. So for the next 9 years, yeah, she'd still be in jail. It'd be rough. But I mean, at least she could make her own shoes.
Man, that's just mean.
Although, by now she's probably too old for that by about 20 years. On the positive, just looking at the positive side, look who just got themselves a new 9-year deal to play in Russia. Hey, let's be glass half full, people. Let's try to dwell on the positive. Hey, before we jump in today, just want to remind you, make sure you're stopping by DailyDoseSports.com. where we have new articles going up every week. We have links to the podcast. We have links to the video. And yes, we have links to our Daily Dose gear. You can get a t-shirt like you can see in the Daily Dose video here. You can get a hoodie. You can get a sweatshirt. A number of items over at DailyDoseSports.com. If you just stop by there, you can find those links. But you know, we are posting new articles every week. I'm putting up a new article every Tuesday. Usually has more of a local slant. Young Jimmy, our featured columnist, he will put out an article on Thursdays. So make sure you're stopping by DailyDoseSports.com every week and seeing what is going on over there. So you know college football is coming. We're going to be talking a lot of college football today on the Dose. But the very first college football USA Today preseason coaches poll was released on Monday. No real big surprises. Alabama was, of course, voted number one. Ohio State came in at number two. And the defending national champion Georgia Bulldogs got the number three spot. Now remember, the Associated Press preseason top 25 will actually be released next Monday, August 15th. But Nick Saban's Crimson Tide received 54 of the first place votes from a panel of 66 college football coaches. Of course, Alabama is coming off that tough loss to Georgia in the championship game. Meanwhile, Ohio State did receive 5 first place votes, and Georgia actually got 6 of their own. One brief side note. Number 18, Texas, also received a first-place vote. And I think it's safe to say that Longhorns head coach Steve Sarkisian cast that bad boy, and also that he is clearly drinking again. Clemson was number 4. Notre Dame was number 5. Michigan, of course, made the college football playoff last year. They were 6, followed by Texas A&M at 7, Utah at 8. Oklahoma at 9, kind of interesting to me, because Oklahoma's got a few things going on down there, going to be interesting to watch that. And Baylor rounded out the top 10. A couple of other notable things in the top 25. The University of Southern California came in at number 15. Remember, they have new head coach Lincoln Riley. They also have his new quarterback that came with him from Oklahoma, Caleb Williams. They don't have a whole lot else. Might be a little high. They did lose a lot. Of course, Texas is at 18. A little bit odd. And a first place vote, even more odd. But then Cincinnati comes in at number 22. Hey, I really like what Cincinnati has done. I like the program that Luke Fickell has built back there. But they did have 9 players drafted this past NFL draft. I mean, is Cincinnati that well stocked? We're going to see. Don't worry. We will be getting you ready for college football over the next few weeks, but that is coming quickly. One interesting kind of NBA story for you this week. RTG Features and MSM have actually said they want a man by the name of David Charles Rodriguez, who actually directed a documentary about soccer player Neymar. They want him to direct a new feature documentary about the Golden State Warriors. No, not the present day Warriors with Clay and Steph. They want a documentary about the NBA trio of Tim Hardaway, Mitch Richmond, and Chris Mullin. They were known at the time as Run TMC, and how that group kind of set the stage for the present day dynasty Golden State Warriors with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green. Now, they say they want this documentary to kind of look at the style that coach Don Nelson, who had his kind of Nelly ball going back at Golden State, how that kind of ushered in the modern NBA, more wide open, more shooting. And while the trio of Hardaway, Richmond, and Mullen played together for 2-3 years, they didn't actually get any championships, but they kind of built what was coming for the Golden State Warriors. They say it's going to be a very, very fun documentary, and they are hoping to have that out sometime soon. Of course, you know it would feature some 80s, some 90s nostalgia. We'd eat that up, right? I think this is a great idea. I think it's a really, really interesting story. Plus, I think this documentary would allow so-called longtime Warrior fans to know anything about that franchise prior to like 2010, because we all know none of them know anything prior to that. Forget going further back, like Joe Barry Carroll. They know nothing about that. Let's just take them back one generation and teach them something. You know, those long, long suffering Warrior fans, all both of them. You know, if we are talking about horse racing, yeah, it's probably not going to be very good. And if you're thinking that right now, you're 1000% correct, because popular Japanese horse jockey, I'm going to butcher the name, I apologize in advance, Teiki Yanagita, he's actually known to his fans as Tiger, has passed away after suffering a number of injuries during a horse race in New Zealand last week. Now, Yanagita was only 28, and what apparently happened, I'm not joking, you can look this up, he fell off his horse early in a race at the Cambridge Jockey Club last Wednesday. He lost his helmet in the fall and then was stepped on by his own horse, trampled on by another horse. That is according to the New Zealand Herald. The horse that trampled him reportedly struck him in the back. He was transferred to a local hospital and placed into an induced coma with serious spinal and brain injuries on Tuesday. And then yesterday, he actually passed away as a result of his injuries suffered in the accident. You know, Yanagito is pretty good. He rode over 160 winners during his racing career in New Zealand, including 42 winners just last year. He was the first jockey to die from a race fall in New Zealand since 2016. Here's where this takes a weird turn. Here's where this has an interesting twist. Because apparently, also yesterday, an anonymous message was sent to the Cambridge Jockey Club, and it said, I'm quoting, "Santa Anita got 29 of us. Now we got one of you. More to come. Sign the horses." Hey, I don't care. That is chilling stuff. That is chilling, scary stuff. Hey, horse racing, say what you will, that is a dangerous, dangerous sport. I don't want anything to do with that stuff. I know they talk about like boxing and MMA and that kind of stuff. Horse racing, that's some dangerous stuff. You are not just talking about injuries. Sometimes, like in this case, you're talking about death. And I mean, it sounds like there could be more to come. Scary, scary stuff out of New Zealand this week. One more story I do want to touch on in sports news this week. And I know it's a little over a week old, but I did want to mention that last week on the Dose, we actually just missed the passing of Los Angeles Dodgers broadcaster Vin Scully at the age of 94. You might remember Vin Scully, one of the greatest ever to do it. He actually covered games in both Brooklyn and Los Angeles. He covered games for the Dodgers for 67 years. But you know, it's kind of interesting because last week on the Dose, we had Dan Sisko on, sports author, a guy that knows about California sports, and he wrote his book about California sports. We actually did talk a little bit about Vin Scully last week. But, you know, I was thinking about that after I kind of got off that call with him and we lost Vin Scully. Think about how good the state of California has had it, just in the broadcasting department. I mean, if you listened last week, you know some of the great coaches they've had in California. Some of the amazing players that they've had come through the state of California, some of them born and raised in the state of California. Amazing sports history in that state. But I want you to think about just the broadcasters. And like I said, we touched on this briefly last week, but I mean, obviously Vin Scully, 67 years with the Dodgers. Probably the best ever to do it. He was phenomenal. But it's not just him. Remember, Chick Hearn was with the Los Angeles Lakers for 41 years. The Los Angeles Kings have had Bob Miller for 44 years. That's absolutely insane. One of the best in the business. Don't forget Dick Enberg, who was one of my favorite announcers ever. But remember, he covered the Rams. He covered the Angels. He did a number of games for UCLA, both football and basketball. Dick Enberg is one of the greatest. Again, most of his work in California. The USC Trojans had Tom Kelly for 42 seasons. Hey, that is quite a collection of talent just right there. But Vin Scully, 67 years in the booth for the Dodgers. We lost him last week at the age of 94. Not just a great announcer, also just a class guy, just a really, really good dude. You hear story after story of ways that he interacted with people, of ways that he always just handled himself with a level of class. We will definitely miss Vin Scully in the sports world. The Dodgers, by the way, will be wearing a commemorative patch to honor Scully for the remainder of the season. Class act there. We have to make sure to remember great, great people like the late Vin Scully. Okay, coming back. Like I said, here at the Daily Dose, I know rivalry week, it's not coming for a while in football. Well, here at the Daily Dose, it's already here because it is rivalry week, and we are going to be looking at some of the greatest rivalries in both the NFL and college football when we get back. So I realize that rivalry week in the world of football, at least here in the United States, it doesn't begin until much, much deeper into the football season. But I wanted to talk about some rivalries this week. Because honestly, is there anything better than bragging rights when you have that rivalry going? Is there anything better than getting that big win against that team that you hate 365 days of the year? Oh, you cannot wait to wear that team gear when your squad has won that big game. And on the other side of that, is there anything worse than losing to that bitter rival? You don't want to go to school. You don't want to go to work. You don't want to see those people. You go out of your way to avoid them. The sound of their fight song just grates on your nerves. You hate them. And we know some of the best rivalries in the world of sports. I mean, Red Sox versus Yankees, Duke versus North Carolina, Lakers versus Celtics, the Pac-12 versus Common Sense. But what are the best rivalries in the National Football League right now? And I'll be very honest. I don't want just the trendy ones. I don't want the new ones. They go, oh yeah, you know, the last 2 years, that's really been a rivalry. No, no, no. Give me the long-standing ones. Give me the hatred that has stood the test of time. I'll give you an example. First rivalry is the one between the New York Jets and the New England Patriots. Now, when this started, they were actually the New York Titans and the Boston Patriots because they were charter members of the American Football League. But games between those two teams have often played out kind of like Yankees Red Sox. I mean, these two cities are close to each other and they genuinely don't like each other. Now, the Patriots have a commanding lead in this series. They lead the series 71-54-1. But remember this, series was dominated early by the Jets. They lost the first game ever played, but then the Titans / Jets actually went 12-7-1 while playing in the AFL. That tie actually occurred back in 1966. It's the only tie in the rivalry history. The Patriots actually led 24-7 after three quarters, but Joe Namath came in, threw two touchdowns, Jim Turner kicked a field goal, tied the game, and it kind of felt like a win for the Jets. Also, it would be the last time the Patriots did not lose to the Jets until 1971 because the Jets went on a tear. And remember, this rivalry, you might think of it now and go, well, the Jets aren't very good. But remember this, rivalry actually completely changed the history of the NFL because it was back in 2001 that New England Patriots quarterback Drew Bledsoe was injured on a hit by Jets linebacker Mo Lewis. Out came Bledsoe, in went a backup quarterback by the name of Tom Brady. Brady actually lost. The Jets actually went on to win 10-3. But I mean, that play changed the direction of the NFL completely. Now, recently, honestly, this rivalry can kind of be summed up on one play. It was back in 2012. The teams met on Thanksgiving, first time they had ever played each other on that holiday. The Patriots won by a score of 49-19, they forced five fumbles, but the most bizarre one of the day was, of course, the butt fumble when Jets quarterback Mark Sanchez ran into the backside of his own offensive lineman, then fumbled the ball. The Patriots picked it up and ran it back for a touchdown. This was actually during a sequence when the Patriots scored 3 touchdowns in 52 seconds. It hasn't gone well for the Jets lately. Bill Belichick and the Patriots have destroyed the Jets, but still one of the greatest rivalries in league history. Next up, we have another heated rivalry. In fact, back in 2005, Sports Illustrated called it the top NFL rivalry of all time, one of the greatest in sports. ESPN ranked it the best rivalry in the NFL. In this rivalry, the two franchises have won 32 division titles and 8 combined Super Bowls. They are actually two of the wealthiest franchises in the NFL. Again, used to be great, lately not quite as good. But this rivalry started back in 1960. When the Dallas Cowboys joined the league as an expansion team, during that year they were in separate conferences, but they did play once during the season. But in 61, Dallas was placed in the same division as Washington. At that time, they were known as the Washington Redskins, and from that point on, they have played each other 2 times every year. Now, the Cowboys lead the series with 75 wins, 47 losses, and 2 ties, but this series between Washington and Dallas, it has had some insane games. Back in 1974, Washington was 8-3. They were getting ready to secure a playoff berth. They played the Cowboys in a nationally televised game in Dallas, and with just 10 minutes to go in the third quarter, Washington was up 16-3. And then it got even worse for Dallas because they knocked quarterback Roger Staubach out of the game. So in comes rookie Clint Longley. Great name, weird dude. Longley somehow comes out and has the game of his life. He throws a 50-yard touchdown to Drew Pearson with just 28 seconds left. The final score, Dallas 24, Washington 23, and Washington was stunned. Their head coach, George Allen, said it was probably the toughest loss he ever had. Fast forward to 1983, and Washington beat the Cowboys in the NFC Championship game. They went on to Super Bowl 17. But prior to the game in Washington, the Washington Stadium was physically shaking because their fans were chanting, "We want Dallas. We want Dallas." The game is probably best remembered for a hit by Washington defensive end Dexter Manley that sent Cowboys quarterback Danny White to the locker room for the rest of the game. And Washington went on to beat Dallas 31-17 and then went on to the Super Bowl where they beat the Miami Dolphins for their first Super Bowl championship. One of the greatest rivalries ever, Washington versus Dallas. Those two hate each other. Another very heated rivalry has to be the one in the AFC between the Kansas City Chiefs and, well, whichever city the Raiders are calling home at that time. Because the rivalry between the Chiefs and the Raiders is one of the most bitter rivalries in the league. This, again, goes back to the AFL. The Chiefs and Raiders have been in the same division. They were in the AFL Western Conference. And then after the merger, they've been in the AFC West. Now, this series is a little closer, but the Chiefs lead the series with 70 wins, 54 losses. They have had 2 ties. The two teams first met back in 1960. And the Chiefs at the time were known as the Dallas Texans. The Texans beat the Raiders 34-16 in that first game in Oakland. But the rivalry didn't really get rolling until the Chiefs moved to Kansas City. And the Kansas City Athletics baseball team moved to Oakland in 1967. Well, now, yeah, these two teams kind of hate each other. In fact, they had identical 12-2 records back in 1968 and faced each other in a playoff game to see who would go to the AFL championship. The Raiders blew out the Chiefs 41-6 the following year. 69. The Raiders beat the Chiefs twice in the regular season and went on to the AFL Western Conference title. They met again in the 69 AFL Championship at Oakland. The Chiefs beat the Raiders. The Chiefs went on to Super Bowl IV and beat the heavily favored Minnesota Vikings. But a game you might remember, back in 1999, the Chiefs and the Raiders played at Kansas City, and a win for Kansas City would put them in the playoffs. The Raiders didn't really have anything to play for. They go out. The Chiefs play a horrible game. They made so many mistakes. The game went into overtime. Rich Gannon drove the Raiders into Chiefs territory, setting up the game-winning field goal. They knocked the Chiefs out of the playoffs. And in 1999, The Raiders got their first win at Arrowhead Stadium since 1988. That's a long time in between wins. Chiefs, Raiders, they hate each other's guts. Now, this next one, it's more of a recent kind of rivalry, but make no mistake, it is a bitter, bitter, violent NFL rivalry, because the Baltimore Ravens and the Pittsburgh Steelers, they kind of take this to another level. This is widely considered to be maybe the most intense and physical rivalries in the NFL. Both teams are members of the AFC North, formerly the AFC Central. The Steelers lead this series 31-24. It has been very, very close. The two teams have met in the postseason four different times, and when they meet in the playoffs, the Steelers have won three of those four games. They are the only two teams in the AFC North to have actually won the Super Bowl. Of course, the Steelers have six bowls, and the Ravens have two, but this rivalry reached a crazy amount of intensity back in 2008. That is when the Ravens and the Steelers played three times. The final one was the 2008 AFC Championship game. The Steelers won all three games, and they were all really, really close. They won on a field goal in overtime in week four. They won in week 15 on a controversial late score. And then in the playoff game, you might remember a personal foul by special teams player Darren Stone cost the Ravens 25 yards. The game's last score was an interception for a touchdown by Steelers safety Troy Polamalu, and the Pittsburgh Steelers beat the Ravens again. In that same game, you might remember Steelers defensive back Ryan Clark delivering a concussion to Ravens running back Willis McGahee, knocked Clark out briefly, forced McGahee to the locker room. He actually ended up in a Pittsburgh hospital. The Steelers went on to win the Super Bowl that year against the Arizona Cardinals. And you might remember another moment in this rivalry. It was Thanksgiving, 2013. The Ravens beat the Steelers 22-20, but the game included an infamous moment when Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin, he says he accidentally walked out onto the field during a kickoff return and stopped the kickoff return from going back for a touchdown. He ended up getting fined $100,000. The Steelers and the Ravens hate each other, and that is a violent, violent rivalry. Finally, we reach a rivalry between two of the oldest teams in the league. The Chicago Bears were founded actually as the Decatur Staleys. That was back in 1919. They ended up becoming the Chicago Bears in 1922. The Green Bay Packers were also formed in 1919, and this rivalry goes clear back to 1921. They have faced each other 204 times total. Of course, the Packers and Bears have played in the same conference or the same division since the NFL went to that conference format back in 1933. But you might remember two very, very key games in this rivalry. First up, back in 1985, and the world was introduced to a rookie defensive lineman by the name of William the Refrigerator Perry. That was on Monday Night Football. And in goal line situations, Bears head coach Mike Ditka would put Perry in, who was around 300 pounds, huge at the time. He would put him in offensive goal line situations as the fullback. Two times, Perry pushed Packers defenders back into the end zone for Bears legendary running back Walter Payton. And in the second quarter, the Fridge was actually given the ball himself. He plunged into the end zone for one of the heaviest touchdowns ever. The Bears won 23-7. The Fridge was born. The Packers were angry. And then in 1997, in one of the crazier games in this series, the Bears led 10-0. The Packers came back, took a 14-10 lead. In the third quarter, Bears quarterback Eric Kramer ran for a 3-yard touchdown to put the Bears out in front 17-14. However, in the final seconds of the third quarter, Packers quarterback Brett Favre hit Mark Chmura for a touchdown. Just back and forth all night. Kramer came back, led a touchdown drive of his own, but the Bears, instead of just kicking the extra point and taking the tie into overtime, said, "We're going for two." They didn't get two. The Packers won the game 24-23. Hey, some very, very good rivalries in the NFL. And I know the NFL doesn't necessarily bring kind of that same rivalry excitement to the table as like college football does, But you can see from our list right there, some really, really good rivalries do still take place in the NFL. And I didn't get to some other ones. I mean, there's some really good ones. Raiders-Broncos, Eagles-Cowboys, Bengals-Steelers. Everybody hates the New England Patriots. So a number of very good rivalries in the NFL, but it's not quite the same as college football. Let's shift over to that right now, because college football has some absolutely insane rivalries. And on some level, if you could beat that team, you could live with some other stuff. Like, beating that team would hide a lot of flaws in your season, but you gotta beat this one team. It is imperative that you beat your rival. We start off in the Pac-12, where two of California's most prestigious universities, they also have a very, very fierce football rivalry, because the big game between the University of Cal Berkeley and Stanford dates back to 1892. Stanford actually leads that series 65 wins, 48 losses, and 11 ties. But this game is probably most remembered for the play when John Elway led Stanford to a late touchdown, and then the officials at the game allowed Cal Berkeley to basically do whatever they wanted on the kickoff return. They returned it for a touchdown and won the game on the final play. Still one of the most bizarre plays in college football. Cal Stanford, very, very good rivalry. Next up, one of the greatest rivalries ever, and we kind of forget about it until it takes place, but the rivalry between Army and Navy, it is probably the most felt rivalry between the two schools. And I realize nationally, Army and Navy, they're not what they used to be, but the two oldest branches of the military have been playing football against each other since 1890. It became an annual tradition in 1930, and Navy leads the series 62-53 with 7 ties. Army versus Navy is that last week after the college football season has ended, and I always tell you here at the Dose, it is a great one. Now, we do have two of the oldest, most prestigious universities in the U.S., duke it out in another rivalry, but this is kind of smaller schools. Because these schools, they have been playing football against each other every year since 1875. The Yale Bulldogs have won 68 games. The Harvard Crimson have won 61 games. Harvard and Yale have tied 8 different times. And this is one of the oldest rivalries in all of college football. But, you know, the rivalry these days is mostly reduced to, like, rich white kids protesting climate change while their universities are some of the biggest polluters on the planet. It's not quite the same as it used to be. One of the biggest college football rivalries ever, though, is the University of Michigan versus Ohio State. These two Midwestern Big Ten powerhouses have been playing each other since 1897. And we always know the Wolverines and Buckeyes will be playing the game around Thanksgiving, and we know it usually has big, big stakes. In 2021, Michigan finally claimed a victory, bringing their all-time lead to 59 wins, 51 losses with 6 ties. But remember, Ohio State has won 17 of the past 20. We will see if Jim Harbaugh can get Michigan another win this year. Odds are probably not, but we'll see. Hey, the Red River Showdown is a rivalry that goes back to 1900. The annual game has been played between Oklahoma and Texas since 1929. And the winner doesn't just get the win and bragging rights. They also get a golden 10-gallon hat. The winning school gets to keep that until the next game. The Longhorns lead this series 55 wins to 47 losses. There have been 5 ties, but Texas has won just 7 of the past 20 games. And don't forget, the Longhorns also lead the series in hurt feelings from when the Sooners make their hook 'em horn sign and then they invert it upside down, which I'm telling you, leads to a lot of wailing, a lot of gnashing of teeth. The Georgia Bulldogs versus the Florida Gators is one of the great football rivalries of the Southeast. Now, the record for this rivalry is actually contested. These two schools hate each other so much, they can't even agree on the record. Florida says Georgia has won 53, they have won 44, and there have been 2 ties. Georgia says they have won 54. Who's right? Who knows? These games are going back to like Civil War era. But this comes back to the schools disagree about when was the first game actually played. Either way, Florida versus Georgia is known for being one of the most epic tailgates ever. In fact, it was given the nickname, just for its tailgating, the world's largest outdoor cocktail party, which school officials tried to actually squash in the last few years, because I think we all know college kids don't even drink. Why would they call it that? Next up, we go back out west where we have UCLA, the University of California, Los Angeles, versus USC, the University of Southern California, a game where the winner gets the victory bell. USC leads the series 49-33. They have had seven ties. This series goes back to 1929. Now, the victory bell was an actual 300-pound bell that UCLA used to ring after every point they scored. And it became the game's trophy after USC students stole the bell back in 1941. Now, remember, both of these teams are headed to the Big Ten. But they should at least be able to continue this series, which they have to. You got to keep this one going. Alabama versus Auburn is known as the Iron Bowl. It has been played since 1893. The Alabama Crimson Tide lead the Auburn Tigers 48-37. There has been just one tie. And we can remember the Iron Bowl providing some insane memories. Most recently, the kick six that Auburn took back for the touchdown, knocking Alabama from being unbeaten. Don't forget about the rivalry between the University of Southern California and the University of Notre Dame. It has been going strong since 1926. The winner of this game gets the jeweled shillelagh, an Irish club adorned with ornaments. Another great rivalry, USC versus Notre Dame. Our final college football rivalry, the University of Miami and Florida State University have been facing each other since the 50s. The Hurricanes lead the Seminoles 35-31 in that series. That rivalry actually goes back to when Florida State first became a co-ed institution in the 50s. Miami was nearby. They said, hey, we're going to play every year. And now they, of course, are in the same conference where they face each other every year. A number of great, great college football rivalries. And, you know, I know that we're kind of just on the edge of football season getting here. But is there anything better than you get to that rivalry week and you're going, oh, I can't wait to play that team this week. I am hoping for the big, big win. College football rivalries are just a little bit different than any other sport. I don't know what it is, but you can just feel it a little more. Okay, coming back, with all the movement going on in college football right now, we're actually losing some of these great rivalries. We're going to talk about a few of those, and then we need to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. Can you come up with the longest lasting college football rivalries ever? We're going to get to the 5 best when we get back. You know, we are seeing so much movement in college football right now. Colleges are basically just playing musical chairs. Everyone is trying to get as much money as they possibly can. And they're all just hoping not to be left without a seat or without a well-paying conference. And while I understand the moves, and I get we are trending towards super conferences, which is basically going to end up just being a full-fledged minor league football system, it does kind of bum me out when you think about some of the football rivalries that we've lost. And even though they may come back for a year or two, they may renew for like a 3-game series, it's never going to be quite the same as it was. Right now, let's talk about a few of the rivalries that we have lost. And it's mostly just because colleges have changed conferences and moved around. And as a result, you can't always get the schedule that you want. Let's start off with one that might come back. We have a chance. But let's look at Texas and Texas A&M. They have actually played 109 games. Texas has won 69 of those games. But remember, this used to be a great in-state rivalry. But then A&M jumped to the SEC back in 2012, and Texas and Texas A&M haven't played each other since. Now, with Texas jumping to the SEC, this could be revived. We just don't know if it will be revived every season or if it will be just every once in a while. Although, even when it does change, I have a feeling it won't be the same because these teams are going to be in the SEC. They're going to be beat up by the time they actually see each other. Now, the average college football fan might not realize the pure hatred for this next rivalry, which literally started because of guerrilla warfare and actual killings back in the Civil War. I'm not even joking. These schools legitimately hate each other. They're only about 2 hours apart. And again, this series is really, really close. 56 wins, 55 losses, 9 ties. This game between these two teams has been violent and nasty. But when the Missouri Tigers jumped to the SEC, it was lost. Because now they're no longer in the Big 12 with the Kansas Jayhawks. And so now these two haven't played since 2011, but Missouri versus Kansas was a heated, bitter rivalry. And here's some bad news. While we see like Texas and Texas A&M joining the same conference, Kansas isn't getting invited to the SEC anytime soon. So that's not going to happen. Another big rivalry in one of the flyover states was here in my home state, Colorado against Nebraska. I mean, here in Colorado, we can remember quarterback Darian Hagan flipping the ball to running back J.J. Flanagan 40 yards down the field and Colorado upsetting Nebraska. We remember Tommy Frazier just torturing the Buffs in Lincoln. Hey, growing up in Colorado, I hated the Nebraska Cornhuskers. I hated all their ugly red. But they lead the series 49 wins, 20 losses. There have been 2 ties. But then Nebraska jumped to the Big Ten. Colorado went to the Pac-12. And now, not only are they not in the same conference, they're both really average. I still think it would be fun to play this series every year again. You might remember they did play in 2018 and 2019. Colorado actually won both those games. And they do have it scheduled to play in 2023 and 2024. But it's not the same. It's not an annual game anymore. And it's not a conference game anymore. So it just isn't as important. Colorado and Nebraska, one of those rivalry games that we lost. Now, you want to talk about hatred? Let's go to the state of Utah, where we used to have the holy war between Utah and Brigham Young University every year. But the series stopped when Utah jumped to the Pac-12. Now, BYU is an independent. Officials at both schools are trying to keep this game on the schedule as much as possible, but it won't restart until 2024. They will have a 4-game series. But I mean, Utah and BYU, they hated each other. Bragging rights were on the line every year. And you know, this was a series that was very, very close. Utah led the series 59 wins. BYU had 32 wins. There were 4 ties. I'm hoping they bring this back because this is a fun series. They need to get this going again. Finally, we finish off with another rivalry of just pure hatred. And you might not think about it if you don't know college football or you didn't attend one of these schools. But if you went to Penn State, you hate West Virginia. If you went to West Virginia, you can't stand Penn State. These two schools first met back in 1904. They played every season from 1947 until 1992. The series ended in 1993 because Penn State jumped to the Big Ten. West Virginia originally jumped to the Big East. Of course, we know now they're in like the Big 12 or whatever. But these two schools announced back in 2013 they were going to get the series going again in 2023 and 2024. One at Penn State, one in Morgantown at West Virginia. And just that announcement alone got West Virginia fans dragging their couches outside. They were getting the kerosene ready. They were ready to light a match right then. I miss that rivalry. I know it may come back for a year or two, but again, it just won't be the same. Hey, I know college football has to evolve. The plan that it was under, where teams were, where they played, who they played, it's all antiquated. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So I understand this evolution kind of has to happen. And yet, in the process, we lose some of these great series. We lose some of these great rivalries. And some of these games, they weren't maybe a national championship game, but they were the biggest game for your team that week. They were the biggest game maybe for your team the entire year. Maybe you weren't having a great year, but you beat that rivalry. It undid a lot of things if you were able to beat that rival. We have lost a number of those rivalry games during this process of what has had to happen, but it is still a painful process. Now, as we do so many weeks here at the Daily Dose, we need to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. Hey, today, We have been talking about rivalries. We have been looking for the best of the best in the NFL and in college football. And while, like we just talked about, we've lost some of these great college rivalries, we also have some rivalries that have absolutely stood the test of time. Today, our Daily Dose is featuring five such rivalries. Now, don't get me wrong. They aren't always the oldest based on year started. That's a different list. But they are the oldest rivalries based on the number of times these two teams have faced each other. These schools play each other every year, and they absolutely love to hate each other. Today, our Daily Dose Top 5 counts down five of the oldest rivalries in college football based on the number of games played. We start off at number five. With a series that was first played 128 years ago, clear back in 1894, it is the fifth most played college football rivalry game in history. The rivalry was officially known as the Civil War from 1929 until 2020. And then both schools announced that they would no longer refer to the game by that name because a lot of woke people had decided that the term Civil War somehow, I don't know, meant they were like pro-slavery instead of understanding the true meaning of the phrase Civil War, which is a war between, you know, the same country. Either way, the rivalry between the Oregon Ducks in Eugene, Oregon, and the Beavers of Oregon State University in Corvallis, Oregon, is one of the most heated rivalries ever. Oregon leads the series with 67 wins, but Oregon State has won 48 times, and there have been 10 ties. These two schools have faced each other 125 times. That ranks them today at number five. Moving on to number four, and also coming in at 125 games, is our number four entry. But this is a little bit older, so they get a notch ahead of Oregon, Oregon State. This is a series that might not be between two of the biggest blue blood type programs that you might expect, but the rivalry game played by the University of Cincinnati Bearcats and the Miami, Ohio Redhawks with the awarding of the Victory Bell Trophy is one of the oldest ever. The first game in the series was played back on December 8th, 1888. In Oxford, Ohio. It was the first college football game played in the state of Ohio. Now, the original bell that they handed out was hung in Miami's Harrison Hall near the site of the first game. They would ring it when Miami, Ohio would win a game. But then they created a traveling trophy that began in the 1890s, and then some Cincinnati fans stole the bell. It's kind of gone back and forth, but this is a very close series. Currently, it is tied. They have each won 59 games. They have tied seven times. Hey, that's as close as it gets. Cincinnati versus Miami, Ohio comes in today at number four. We move on to number three. And we reach what is called the South's oldest rivalry. No, this actually isn't like a racial thing. It is the rivalry game played annually by the Virginia Cavaliers at the University of Virginia and the North Carolina Tar Heels from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. On October 22nd, 1892, Virginia beat Carolina 30-18. And now, these two teams have played each other 126 times. You know, when you think of ACC football, you think of Miami, you think of Florida State, Clemson, maybe Georgia Tech, but Virginia and North Carolina have one of the oldest and most bitter rivalries ever. North Carolina has won 64 times. Virginia has won 58 times. There have been four ties. Very, very close rivalry. The South's oldest rivalry comes in today at number three. So we arrive at the number two oldest college football rivalry based on number of games played. And this is also 126 games, but it's a little bit older. And this one is called the Deep South's oldest rivalry. Because the first college football game between the Auburn Tigers and the University of Georgia Bulldogs was played back on February 20th, 1892 in Atlanta, Georgia. It has been renewed annually every year since 1944. In fact, they claim that the whole War Eagle battle cry by Auburn fans actually began during a game with their hated rivalry, Georgia. Georgia leads this series, but it has been very competitive. Georgia has won it 62 times. Auburn has won it 56 times. There have been 8 ties. The Deep South, Auburn versus Georgia at 126 games, comes in today at number 2. So we arrive at our number 1 oldest college football rivalry by games played. And we arrive at a rivalry that used to award an annual trophy called the Slab of Bacon. I'm not actually lying. You can look it up. Unfortunately, the Slab of Bacon trophy disappeared back in 1943. They never found it again. So, the rivalry between the Minnesota Golden Gophers and the Wisconsin Badgers now hands out Paul Bunyan's axe to the winner of their long-standing series. This rivalry started back in 1890 on Minnesota's campus in Minneapolis, and Minnesota actually won that game 63-0. In 1906, President Theodore Roosevelt suspended college football rivalry games for safety concerns because they were worried about injuries, and also they were getting worried about fatalities. There were a number of deaths on the field. It is the only year that Wisconsin and Minnesota did not play each other. Now, it is the longest uninterrupted rivalry in Division I college football. The game has never been played in any city besides Minneapolis or Madison, Wisconsin. But Minnesota and Wisconsin have played 131 games. Wisconsin leads the series, and it is the longest played college football rivalry of all time. You know, I know that some weeks in college football, we just look at the top games between the top-ranked teams. But don't forget, there are some very heated rivalries being played as well. And as you might have noticed, a lot of these long-played rivalry games, they are very close as far as records go. You might want to tune into some of these games that are a little below the radar because they might end up being much better games than you expected. Hey, these teams hate each other. And they know each other so well that it makes for very, very close games every single year. Hey, next week on The Dose, we are continuing to ramp up for the upcoming football season. We're going to be looking at a few teams in both the NFL and college football that are still trying to find their starting quarterbacks. What are the hottest quarterback battles going into the season? We're going to look at them next week. Plus, we'll keep you up on the latest in sports news, and we just might have another Daily Dose Top 5 for you. So be sure you stop by the Daily Dose. Be sure you let a friend know to do the same. Hey, I want to say thank you to each and every one of you for listening to the Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. Thank you for going over to DailyDoseSports.com and checking out the new things going up there every week. But more than anything, thank you so much for sharing the show, for sharing the podcast, for sharing the articles with someone that you know. We absolutely love it when you do that. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.
Man, that's just mean.